The award-winning German director, Wim Wenders, is best known for his films Paris, Texas, Wings of Desire, The End of Violence, and The Buena Vista Social Club. Earlier this month, he gave a speech at a conference in Brussels entitled A Soul for Europe. A Soul for Europe is a project under the patronage of the European Parliament and the European Commission, which aims to promote the importance of culture outside the cultural sector. One element of the project is a series of discussions on the interaction between culture and politics. We sent Sean Rocks to Brussels to hear Wim Wenders address the conference, and afterwards he spoke to the film director about his vision for Europe.
Wim Wenders, for a long time you have been the champion, I suppose, of independent filmmaking, of being outside the studio system, yet here you are today as a part of this Soul for Europe project, very much at the heart of the system, at the heart of the political system. What was it that attracted you to be part of it?
I'm a very convinced European. As a German, it was a great relief for me when I was a kid that I could be patriotic about something. I certainly didn't want to be a German patriot, but the idea of Europe really was big for me. It really meant a lot in my life. And now, in this period where you see a lot of young people sick and tired of Europe, and where you realize Europe is no longer fascinating for them. There's no more dream about Europe. There's no more utopia in the European idea. I felt personally sad about this, and when the invitation came to talk about a next step in European consciousness, in incorporating culture more into the flow of European ideas, then I gladly said yes. I mean, Europe defines itself all the time so much in political and economic terms that I think it's high time to start talking about Europe as a cultural unit. And it's not unified, in the opposite. I mean, there's no place more diversified as Europe culturally.
The title A Soul for Europe seems to suggest either that we have one that we need to polish up and improve upon, or that we've lost one, or that there is a need for one. What is your take on it? What is the state of the European soul?
Of course, Europe has a soul. It has a very old soul. But it constantly needs to reflect itself through new images, in new text, in new music. The European soul is all of Europe's cultures, I should rather say. But it doesn't want to be instrumentalized. It doesn't want to be at the service of politics. Europeans are very adamant about that. That's why they said yet to all the referendums. They were taken on the wrong foot too. They thought something is being taken away from us, because it wasn't communicated in any other terms than political terms what was happening. And the reticence towards Europe is never, ever towards Europe as a cultural idea. It's always towards Europe as a bureaucracy.
But this morning when in your speech, when you were talking about the soul of Europe and avoiding that instrumentalizing, if you like, you suggested that perhaps it was artists that should have tried to sell the idea of the European referendum. How would you get that consciously into your work rather than just as a vague idea at the back of it?
I think nobody really has tried to leave that communication between Europe and its people to artists. I think it's a new path. And I think the way that art and culture can accompany politics in order to make that notion, that idea of Europe shine again, that is a whole new concept. I mean, it's there as desire. It is there as a plan to have culture go hand in hand with politics. But it's difficult to do it and to see how it can work, because again, culture doesn't want to be at the service of politics. It's its very nature. So I think we have to find different strategies in Europe to make culture and to make that treasure of the European cultures work for Europe as a unity.
The president of the European Parliament, Herr Pottering, spoke about the use of Beethoven 9 as the European anthem when he spoke at the Knesset recently in Israel. Do you see that as a as an instrument, as culture being used? I mean, after all, Beethoven wrote a symphony as opposed to a European anthem.
I think that music has an emotional impact and is already is does not belong to Germans anymore at all. I've heard that music play in Japan. I've heard it in Australia. I've heard it all over Europe. I think it already belongs to a bigger and certainly better idea than the German nation. So I'm not against it. I think it is necessary to not just represent Europe with symbols, a flag, buildings, a capital as dry as Brussels presents itself. I think we need to find, and the anthem, Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, is just one little thing in there. We need to fill that emotional void with a lot of different ways.
Your characters, we think of somebody like Travis in Paris, Texas. He's an individual who has to exist, or who exists outside of society for his own personal reasons. Can the artist exist in that way, outside of the political system totally, and yet be part of creating this European culture?
I think so. I think so, especially in the age of that's coming towards of the, in that global culture. I think arts in Europe are something local, and it's sometimes in one country there's already several cultures incorporated, and that in that global marketplace that the world is turning to, these cultures are all in big dangers of disappearing. And I think Europe is one of the few structures, one of the few ideas that by its very nature can help the local color, the local art, the local culture, the local language to survive. I think Europe is a great umbrella because it doesn't have any imperialistic tendencies.
In the work that you've done with Bono, the Million Dollar Hotel, Ireland is going through what we call the Celtic Tiger phase at the moment. Did you get any sense from him when working with him that the soul had been lost in a country like Ireland, a very ancient soul, that money had somehow taken over from that?
Yeah, I've been to Ireland a couple of times in the course of the last year, and ever since I first went there 35 years ago, I think a lot of things happened. Like the city of Berlin right now is being bought up by the Irish. I have people who work in real estate that say that the Irish are buying whole streets like there was no tomorrow. I mean, it's a new thing. And it wouldn't please me more if it happened to anybody else than the Irish. In their history, they're so often so badly beaten that finally the famous luck is turning up. But then again, it probably creates a whole new set of problems. I mean, already a lot of foreigners come to Ireland to look for work. The desire to work is not so big anymore because a lot of people have a lot of money and a lot of time, and so they let other people do their work. And that, of course, I've lived through that in the 50s and 60s in Germany, when all of a sudden everybody around us was Italian, and 10 years later everybody around us was Turkish because I lived in the Ruhr district. So I think it's probably a very new thing for the Irish to live through that. And it's an experience probably, and it brings along lots of changes. I mean, I wasn't aware that real estate is nowhere more expensive in Europe than in Ireland right now. I mean, my image was still different, and then I was shocked to see with my own eyes how much had changed and how much Ireland, and certainly propelled by Europe, I think so, has struck it rich.
Outside of that economic richness that we have you seen a corresponding growth in Irish culture? As a European, has something come back to you, things that you hadn't seen before culturally?
Difficult to say because you have to go there. Culture, the traveling cultures are books and writers. And that is, of course, the oldest Irish tradition is the enormous input into European literature. I see my share of Irish films. Some of my good friends, like Jim Sheridan, do a lot of amazing work. And obviously, I don't have to point it out, some of my favorite music is Irish. But all the rules are rewritten right now because it's almost like you can't make music anymore for a local place. You have to think of making music for that will travel. And if it doesn't travel, then you don't have a chance at home.
So it really is important that the individual holds on to his or her own roots. You, in your youth, had the facility to cycle across Europe on a bicycle, to cycle off into to look at the different art galleries. In Ireland, we're out on the edge of the continent, if you like. Do you have a sense of that still belonging to this whole European project? How does it feel for you as part of a European mainland?
I think it is because of all the Irish books and plays and poems that I read when I was 20, earlier, younger. I think it's by just greedily reading about Ireland and imagining Ireland, long before I ever went there, that in my own book, Ireland is the very center of Europe. I don't know. I know it's an island, but from everything I read there, from everything I received through Irish literature, it occupies a central part in my European heart.
This morning's event was very much about politics and culture walking hand in hand. I've read about your film Land of Plenty, where people talk about it being probably one of your most overtly political works to date. It's set in post 9/11 America. What was it that sent you to be that overtly political about the situation in America?
Because I lived in Los Angeles at the time, and as a European living in Los Angeles in 2003, early 2003, spring, summer, the war started. Germany and France didn't go. They were very adamant at what they thought of it. And out of a sudden, me as a German, I felt very much of stranger in the place I'd lived on already for 10 years. It was tough to be a European because we were the axis of weasels, the French and the Germans. And I made myself a T-shirt saying, proud to be a weasel. And a lot of my neighbors didn't think it was funny. And I've seen people throw their French wine into the gutter. It was tough in 2003. And it was also sad to see this American patriotism go run amok and see how in this country that has such a great tradition of freedom of speech, nobody dared to say anything anymore. People who did speak up, the few who spoke up then, really suffered. I remember my friend Sean Penn, what kind of a beating he got when he traveled to Iraq and when he wrote an open letter to the president opposing the war. At the time, nobody said anything. So I was appalled. I lived in America and I thought they were betraying their innermost values, Americans. And at the same time, I mean, you live in Los Angeles and you realize you live in the capital of hunger in the United States, that is. And nobody speaks of poverty in America. And all of that made me so angry. The billions spent in Iraq that were needed, not just everywhere in the world, but even in the very core of the richest city on earth that you think is Los Angeles. There's people in the street dying of hunger. And I was so angry, I decided to make a film about it. It was born out of anger, even if the film itself doesn't have that anger feeling, because, I don't know, anger never really gets you anywhere except into polemics, and I'm not a polemic filmmaker. So I made a film about the climate of paranoia, of poverty in America.
This morning you were speaking very much about politics and culture walking hand in hand, accompanying each other. Do we really have to find a new language for these two forms, the political and the cultural, to speak to each other?
Very much so. Very much so. I think it's a whole new vocabulary that has to be invented. So art and culture is not being instrumentalized, is not being used for political reasons. That never works. But on the other hand, in order to raise the idea of Europe to a different level and to take it out of the realm of politics and economics into a realm of, let's say, a pride of being European, and into the realm of feeling protected and feeling at home here and feeling good about Europe, I think include culture in the European idea is the most necessary step. And how to do that, and how to have culture accompany politics without being eaten up by them, that requires a whole new dramaturgy.
Well, your films have often started with no script and followed along on a road to completion. Do you see today then as the beginning of something, and you have no idea where it's heading?
Totally. Already now, an hour after that speech and after the discussion about it, I think I could already write another chapter to it. But that's the way it goes. You have to talk and you have to listen in order to see something that nobody has seen before.
Wim Wenders, thank you very much.
Thank you.